Okay, I was asked to talk about these inclusive Higgs cross sections at the LHC. And since I only have half an hour, I'll have to skip a lot, of course, and cannot really motivate the things as I should do, I guess. So I'm basically focusing on things that I was doing, and basically just give a brief sketch of what has happened. So I will talk about inclusive Higgs cross sections. First of all, of course, the most important one, gluon fusion. I will talk about the next to leading order calculation that basically we all know now in the standard model, and also progress in the radiative corrections in the MSSM to gluon fusion. Then I will talk about Higgs associated production of the Higgs with bottom quarks, and in connection with that, also briefly associated production with top quarks. And in the end, I will talk about a little bit Higgs Strahlung at next to leading order plus electroweak corrections. What is not covered in this talk is weak boson fusion, any kinds of distributions for Higgs production, PT distribution, rapidity distributions, and I will also not talk about backgrounds. And I have listed here some names. If you're interested, then you should contact these people, which are more experts in these fields than me. So let's first come to gluon fusion. It is certainly one of the most important production channels at the LHC. It has by far the largest cross-section of all production modes. And if you look at this diagram, it has two gluons in the initial state, so the leading order process is already alpha is squared. So it means that it has intrinsically already large theoretical uncertainty due to these scale variations. Since the leading order is already alpha squared, alpha s varies with the renormalization scale. So we should go to higher orders to get better control of the theoretical prediction to this. Now, if we do this, then we have to compute these diagrams. This is just a sample of these diagrams. It means at next to leading order, these two-loop massive diagrams with three external legs, and then at next to leading order, we have to, in principle, do this three-loop, three-point functions, which is very hard to do, of course. Then also we have real radiation. Now, this is, of course, a very tough business if you really want to do this exactly at higher orders. But luckily, there is something which we call the heavy top limit. So it turns out that if you assume, or if you take the limit that the Higgs is much lighter than the top quark mass, everything reduces to much simpler diagrams. Namely, you can basically write everything as a coefficient function, which is universal for any process that couples these two gluons to a Higgs boson, times the process diagrams, which are reduced by one loop and don't contain the top quark anymore. This universal coefficient function has been computed perturbatively up to very high orders. And in fact, it turns out that if we define the heavy top limit in this way, so this is the cross-section in the heavy top limit, and then we compute the higher order corrections in this limit and scale everything by this factor, which is the full top mass dependence at leading order, that is this diagram here. And we normalize it to the leading order cross-section in the heavy top limit. Now, this shows you how well this works. At next to leading order, we know both results. We know the exact result, keeping the full top mass dependence, and we know the result in the heavy top limit, of course, just by we can expand it or we can compute it in other means. So this is the exact result, which has been obtained in 95. And this is how it compares to the heavy top limit. And you see that this is the top quark threshold. I have skipped bottom quarks here. So there is no bottom quark loops included here. And you see that this heavy top limit just works perfectly. And it works even to very high values of the Higgs boson mass. But this is certainly the most important region here. And you see that if we assume this heavy top limit, we are doing very well.
You said that is, it seems really surprising.
Excuse me?
Why is that? Because out of big Higgs mass, it's the opposite from Higgs mass much less than the top. Do you
Yes, yes, yeah, though it works. That's right. Why? Because, okay. Now, this is the old argument that, or it's rather old already, that radiative corrections to this process are dominated by soft gluons, soft gluon radiation. Now, if the gluons are soft, then they don't resolve this top triangle. So that's why higher order corrections are basically independent of this top work mass. And the leading order top mass dependence you pull out from this, as I showed in this definition before. You pull out the leading order top mass dependence.
That's why you get right this threshold mass.
That's right. That's right. Otherwise, you would just get a curve that goes like this. So, luckily, this next to this heavy top mass limit works very well, because if we look at the next two leading order corrections, this is this blue band here. Now, no matter if you look at them exactly or in this heavy top limit, as I showed you before, this it makes no difference. You see that these corrections are rather large, can amount up to 70% or more with respect to the leading order, and also the uncertainty does not really reduce due to scale variations, and also these two uncertainty bands or estimates of the uncertainty don't really overlap. So it's very, okay, this is not very promising here, and you want to know what happens at higher orders. So using this heavy top limit, it was possible to go to the next to leading order, and this is what you get. This is this red band at next to leading order in the heavy top limit, and you see actually a very satisfactory result, namely the scale dependence reduces quite significantly. Also, these two uncertainty bands or uncertainty estimates overlap. So that tells you that the gluon fusion channel in the standard model is fairly well under control with this next to leading order calculation. Yes?
Can you remind me how you define the bands?
The bands?
How you perform the discrete variation?
This is setting mu f equals mu r and varying both between m Higgs over 2 and 2 m Higgs. Okay?
These three calculations were done in the same approximation.
They are all done in the heavy top limit. That's right.
So what is new?
Here, nothing is new. They're basically all the same. They use different methods. Different methods of the calculation, but the result is all the same. Excuse me? That's right. I mean, I'm not going to go into details here, because this is rather old already. I mean, 2 years old. So, Higgs gluon fusion in the standard model. This is the fixed order result. Now, since I said before already that this cross section seems to be dominated by the soft gluons, the question arises: do these soft gluons maybe play an important role at higher orders? And there has been some work by Massimiliano and collaborators doing the soft gluon resummation. And actually, what you find is that the effect of this soft gluon resummation is not very large. But we will come to that in the next talk. So you see that even though there is some effect, not even really at next to leading order, but so this is fairly well under control. And you can say that the next to leading order fixed order result is a fairly good approximation, I would say. Now let's go to gluon fusion in supersymmetry. Mm-hmm. Well, the dominant contribution or the leading order contribution in supersymmetry comes from the stop loops. And now, naively, you could say I just proceed like in the standard model, and compute QCD corrections to this. And I also can use the heavy stop limit, and I also get a coefficient function times the process diagrams are identical. The only thing that changes is this coefficient function. This has been done by Dawson, Giardi, and Spierer in 96. Any Higgs, light or I mean, the scalar Higgs, light or heavy, doesn't really matter. Only the coupling changes here. Now, this was done in this way, but what you observe, actually, that this is not really SUSY. In fact, if you do everything correctly, you compute these diagrams, you renormalize everything in the right way, you find that this gives you a divergent result. So this coefficient function is not really in supersymmetry if you just use this. What is the reason for that? Well, the reason is that you have to take into account gluinos. If you really do the renormalization of this Yukawa couplings correctly, you get 1 over epsilon poles, which have to be canceled by these diagrams. And now the thing changes dramatically. I mean, the structure of the result changes, because here, like in the standard model, you only have one scale in this heavy top limit, namely stop mass. Now here you have three scales: top mass, stop mass, and gluino. And that, okay, here we go. Top mass, top gluino, and stop. Now we go to the heavy top stop gluino limit. We compute again this coefficient function. The process diagrams are again identical, and but the fact that you have this dependence on these three masses changes that the coefficient function is not only a number anymore, but it actually is a complicated function of these dimensionless ratios, m top over m stop over m gluino. And in fact, you observe something very peculiar, namely that if you take the gluino, for example, to infinity, so you say, let's say if we can recover the result by Giuardi, Spira, and Dawson by taking the gluino mass to infinity, but that doesn't work because that gluino does not decouple from supersymmetry. You get divergences like log m gluino. Now, this was work that I've been doing with Matthias Steinhauser. We are currently doing more detailed phenomenological study, so I'm not going to show any results for this.
Can you explain this?
Well, if you take the gluino from this, from supersymmetry, then sort of you violate the relation between the Yukawa couplings of the top and the stop. The Yukawa couplings of the top and the stop are related in supersymmetry, of course. Now, this relation, if you remove the gluino from, if you just take supersymmetry and take away the gluino, then this theory will no longer be supersymmetric. Yes. And that's why you have this non-decoupling of the gluino.
What prevents you from, the gluino mass comes from this supersymmetric ranking terms, and you can choose the mass field time?
This decoupling behavior in supersymmetric theories is quite simple. So there is not a signal. You cannot shift individually these ranking masses from other. There are many cases where you have non-decoupling. So the reason is that you have a renormalization of the strong coupling. And the strong coupling also gives you the power coupling theories. So the counterterms are fixed on the base set. And if you don't include the gluino, you have divergence. And this divergence is the log of the gluino. So the coupling. And then you don't have a supersymmetric. That means you want. You have two coupling constants. You have the gluon interaction with the core, and you have the gluon interaction. So you have a Yukawa coupling and you have a gauge coupling. And they are related by a supersymmetry. When you renormalize the Yukawa coupling independently, then there is no problem. But then you have no supersymmetric theory.
Well, what you can do if you decouple all the SUSY particles at the same time, of course. If you send the stop mass and the gluino mass to infinity at the same time, you will recover the standard model. Okay?
Even if the gluino is much heavier than, let's say, the squares.
Yes.
You should be able to decouple the gluinos, of course.
Yes.
You have an additional gluino there, which is not a supersymmetric.
If you give up sort of the SUSY relation between the two Yukawa couplings of the top and the stop, you evolve both of them independently, you can of course absorb this logarithm.
Okay.
You don't have
that we call decoupling.
Let's say it does not naively decouple. You cannot just send it to infinity and you will get this.
Essentially just having scalar matter.
Well,
that's right.
So the running decoupling constant means decoupling. If you can
is no less trans, absolutely extra nuclear coupling than you see in this. It is decoupled.
No, I mean, if you hit the lambda pole and you have a coupling in the long, then it's not decoupled. I mean, if this is a logarithm which drives that you have a coupling to infinity at some point, it's not decoupled.
Yeah, but that's a different case. That's a different case. What is the other scale appearing in this logarithm, making the argument scaleless?
Any m top or m stop?
So it's not always m green over m stop, but any combination.
Yes, I mean.
Yeah. So if you reverse it, you take the stop to infinity and green over fixed, you get a similar result.
That's right.
So do you know the coefficient of the log? Of course.
The coefficient of this log? Yeah. Yes, of course, we know.
Of the corresponding
Yukawa coupling, yes.
Did you check?
No. Okay. Okay. Now, so far about the gluon fusion in supersymmetry. There's one more word to say, namely. You also, in supersymmetry, you also get contributions from bottom quarks if tangent beta is large. Now here you run into a problem because the bottom is definitely not much heavier than the Higgs, no matter what you do. And so in principle, we only have this next to leading order result by keeping the full bottom mass dependence of Spira, Giardi, Graudenz, and Servas. And of course, you can play around using heavy bottom approximation, something,
I'm good. A little controlled, I think, because the next reading order was calculated by. Right? So we can compare.
This is calculated.
Yeah, so therefore, that's what you say, right? That you can check and the first diagram is much more important than the second.
It depends on the value of tangent beta. I mean, here I have this plot where I compare the heavy top, the heavy bottom to the exact result, and okay, but I don't want for different values of the Yukawa couplings.
You should go to tangent beta 40 or 50.
It depends. I mean, even for example, okay, this is the ratio of the two Yukawa couplings for bottom and top. If you set this to 10, then at small Higgs masses you get effects of like 20 to 30%. But actually what you see is that if you make it very large, you never get an effect that is larger than 40% or something. But okay, I didn't want to discuss this in too much detail. I just put it in here. So this is still sort of an open issue, what to do with the bottom loops if you really want to have a next to leading order result here.
And if you do that for the axial, it's basically the same.
For the pseudoscalar, it's basically the same. Okay, now let's continue with a different process for Higgs production. Namely, instead of looking at Higgs production through virtual top quarks, we can now consider real top quarks. The Higgs coupling is very large, of course, as here, and we can produce the Higgs in association with two top quarks. Now, the cross-section for this process turns out to be rather small. Nevertheless, for small Higgs masses, it turns out to be a rather important supplementary mode for Higgs discovery, for Higgs masses below like 120 GeV or so. Also, due to these external top quarks, you get a handle on the top Yukawa coupling, a direct handle on the top Yukawa coupling. So if you have sufficient luminosity, you can use this as a measurement of the Higgs top Yukawa coupling. Now this process has been evaluated recently, or not so recently, like 3 years ago, to next to leading order. Because if you look at the leading order result, of course, the theoretical uncertainty is rather large. This is the leading order. But if you go to the next to leading order, then you get a very, very nice, very flat result, which is here the renormalization scale for a certain value of the Higgs boson mass. Nevertheless, the more disappointing result is that the QCD corrections to this process are rather small. So you cannot, you don't get a large increase from the radiative corrections. The cross section remains rather small.
So next week we can
go by LoRa. Yes, I'm not going to spend too much time on this. I mean, actually, I'm done here.
This is integrated over all phase space.
This is integrated over all space. That's right. Now, talking about this TT bar Higgs process, let's again look at supersymmetry. Again, we have this enhancement of the bottom Yukawa coupling for large tangent beta. And in addition to this TT bar Higgs process, we can also have the Mibi bar Higgs process. Just like before, where we were producing the Higgs through virtual bottom loops, now we can produce the Higgs in association with bottom quarks. Now, if you want to have higher order corrections to this, then you could say, I just use this calculation by these two groups, and instead of using the top mass, I insert the bottom mass. However, you run into problems here, because the bottom is so much lighter than the Higgs boson. So if you really integrate over all phase space, you obtain collinear logarithms of this form. And in particular here in this process, you get this value squared. So the leading log is like alpha is squared log squared from the two gluons that split into bottom quarks. So the idea is to resum these logarithms. And that sort of naturally leads you to bottom parton densities. That means instead of using these gluon densities and gluon splitting into bottom quarks, bottoms radiate a Higgs, I resum all these logarithms and put them into bottom densities. So the leading order process rather than this is BB bar going to Higgs. Now note that this is only for the inclusive rate. So in this case, you will not, you have to give up trying to see the bottom quarks in the final state. This is really integration over all phase space. Now, if you do this, what has been observed, if you do this, compare this calculation to this calculation, you get a factor of 10 in the total rate. So people were wondering, what is the reason? Now you say, of course, here I resum all these logarithms, but on the other end, here I neglect all the high PT contributions. The contributions from bottom quarks produced at high PT, because this is really the collinear approximation. So now you can try to go to higher orders. And these higher orders, you do just like a normal partonic higher order calculation, like Dreyan, for example. You do the next, for example, this term of the next two leading order, and you have to subtract the collinear pieces that you have resumed into these parton densities. So instead of resumming this alpha s times log terms, I get the next two leading order term like this here will be suppressed by 1 over L, 1 over this one power of these collinear logarithms, because you subtract them here. And in the same way, you also have virtual corrections, of course. They again have all these collinear logarithms, but they have one order of alpha s more virtually. So at next to leading order, what you basically do is you sum all these terms, alpha s log b times alpha s squared times the leading log. So this is this alpha s times log b squared, which is here starting from n equals 2. And the next to leading order term has one power less of the logarithm. Now let's look at what happens at next to leading order. Here we have these kinds of diagrams, and the virtual corrections have two powers of alpha s more. Then there's the single real radiation with one gluon exchange. You have alpha s higher and one suppression by this collinear logarithm. And here, now what you see here is that at next to leading order, actually you find this process again that you actually started with, the glue going to BB bar. But now in this case, if you subtract all the collinear pieces that you have absorbed into this leading order piece. So this is actually now suppressed by two powers of this collinear logarithm. And what you get then at next to leading order is actually really a full result at order alpha s squared, resumming all these logs. And higher order terms do not have any of these logs anymore. They're just alpha squared. So if you add a gluon here, it will only contribute to this DN3. It nominally does not have these logarithms anymore. They should all be contained in this Pardon distribution functions. The reason is, of course, because you only have two initial state gluons. So you only have two powers of these logarithms here. Now, what you find is, this is, again, the scale variation, factorization scale dependence of this BB bar Higgs cross-section. At leading order, you see a very strong dependence on the factorization scale. And this is next to leading order, a little bit better, but still monotonous. You have sort of no point of least sensitivity or something. And then if you add the next to leading order curve, then you get a very, very flat behavior. And also interesting observation is that the radiative corrections, and we had this discussion like 2 days ago, the radiative corrections seem to be small at fairly low values of the factorization scale. Now, there have been arguments that I'm not going to go into here, that the right factorization scale should be should be m Higgs over 4. This would be somewhere here, and you see indeed that the next to leading order corrections are zero in this case.
Can you compare this to the result without logs?
That's right. I'm coming to that now. So let's see. BB bar to Higgs goes, you were looking at my screen in the office. And then so you can do this calculation at next to leading order. So these people were claiming that you should really do this next to leading order calculation because that is the only thing when you can learn something from that. Now, actually, you learn something from this, namely, it really doesn't work too well. If you integrate over all PT of the bottoms, this is the leading order curve, and this is the next to leading order curve. So this is not very encouraging. In particular, since this is a logarithmic scale here, I mean, it sort of pretends to be, I don't know, it's a funny scale here. Huh?
So you don't resum that one?
Here you don't resum. You just...
Of course you get very large loops.
That's right.
Robert, I wanted to compare the non-resum leading order with the resum. I mean, next leading order is already alpha cubed.
Non-resummed leading order with the resummed. So you want to compare this at leading order to?
To your previous plot.
To my previous plot. Okay, maybe wait for one. not really.
Now, you know how bad it is without resummation, is that right? No,
that's right. I
want
to compare the resummed result, which is alpha squared plus higher order terms with logs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you start out saying that there is some non-resum, and the leading order resum, and they are like competitive.
That's right.
Now we have a stable curve, and I want to see where it lies compared to the leading order
calculus. Well, okay. Now I can go to this. If you want. This is the leading order. This is the leading order resummed. And the next to leading order resummed, the leading order non-resummed should be somewhere a factor of 10 below.
Below what? Because it's so scale dependent. It's
scale dependent. This was assuming a factorization scale of m Higgs. Of course, the uncertainty is very large.
So it's
a factor 6 larger than the
non-resummed. The previous
calculation
was a live fixed order calculation.
This one, that's
using
right.
Using the long BB variation.
That's right.
And that's it.
That's it.
And you see now if you add the first process, the BB variation.
Yes.
And then you go to the next figure, right? And the next
few. You mean this?
And now in the last order is. So what is the last order?
This here is BB bar going to Higgs at leading order.
That is the last order.
This is resummed leading order.
It's just BB bar H, I see.
That's right.
What is the two together?
There
is the two together.
There is no two together. This is not resummed. This is just
Yeah, because in principle you can in principle auto change function like
yes.
And then you see that these two different
no, but if you okay.
Well, I think Zoltan and Martin want to have the dash curve from this one
with the dash
curve from the previous
okay.
one on the same plot.
Okay, I don't have that.
Dash curve on the previous plot.
But yeah. First of all, okay, I don't. No, but.
No, it's vector one.
No, but I mean. But why would you want to have that? I mean, you're comparing. No, I mean.
Because that's the number of events.
At leading order is no number of events. At leading order is a bad approximation. Anyways, so
you
this is.
See how bad it is.
Okay. This leading order. That's right.
Also, I'm. Your terminology is confusing.
Yes.
BB by H.
Yes.
This loss curve is called BB by H. So what is the loss curve? What is the end of this GG process.
This LO, this, okay, forget, this is not on this plot at all.
So why have this time?
Because this is the subject of this part of my talk.
So can you just go back to the previous transparency to see what the numbers are?
Yes, let's see.
Femtobarns, there it was.
This is picobarns.
Yeah, there it was around 300 femtobarns at mu r equals mh half. And here for the leading order at the same scale, it is about 450 femtobarns. So it is a factor of 50%.
50%?
50%.
If you compare leading orders.
If I compare the leading order on here.
Yes.
I think the fact that it was only for coverage one.
Yeah. With the leading order on the other plot.
Yes. Okay.
So let's. It's not that big. I mean, it's just 300 femtobarns.
But what? What are you looking here?
But this statement is very scale dependent.
But wait.
It's extremely scale dependent.
No, but.
It also works by Robert. The red curve. This means the cross section is about 600 to 700 femtobarns.
Okay.
Now we go back to the next.
This is next to leading order.
Yeah,
okay.
Sure. Just go forward.
So 600 to 700 femtobarns is
here. Yes.
If you use the next to leading order.
If you know what you're after, and you put the band of what you're after on this, then these curves cross this band. That's the point.
Who knows what the equal distribution actually
is? Well, it generates perturbative.
Okay, but do we have any experimental control on that at all?
No.
Yes.
But what usually matters are the difficulties of the features that you want to produce. So with that kind of argument, I probably can argue my way to some.
No, but okay. Okay, I don't know what we're arguing.
You can argue your way to the right.
Yeah, but what you cannot say is that this calculation makes no sense.
Yes. Okay.
It's not fair
this year.
Okay. So case the exclusive process. You have next to next leading order. The first factor inside the selection.
This one.
Yes. The first fact, no, this how fast the load be the end.
That's right.
Is that in the part of density?
That is basically the part on density.
That's the part of density.
That's right.
So also I piece of the as this sketch will be there is some control
on the
density. On the
density. And we can't make it work.
Control?
Who's in charge?
You're the chairman. But make them shut up. No.
So you did the calculation, the perturbator you generated.
Yes, that's right.
And the assumption is, which is supported by the net fragmentation data, that's a good approximation.
Okay.
Is that it's not a good answer?
Yeah,
net fragmentation data? Like, because in the case of fragmentation processing, it is quite good. But it should also
work. It's fairly bad.
Very bad.
Well, sorry to say that's a
question of taste.
But isn't it also supported by the utility PDF for charm, with the charm, F2 charm, and things of that sort? That gives a support for generating perturbative generation of
Well, I mean, okay, let's no make
typical order of X.
Typical value of x.
Is 0.05.
In this process, it's the same as for Higgs production. I mean, it's the same as the gluon fusion, no? So maybe
it's better, right? Is better than small x.
Okay. No, I mean, okay, experience tells you that once you start talking about these bottom distributions, it doesn't stop, okay? So maybe we should just stop. Because that is something that... So maybe I should just continue. One more slide that I have here, and that is something that shows you that you really have problems, that this here, this problem here that you... I mean, here there is basically no convergence. I mean, the next to leading order does not look much better than the leading order. So, but here, one thing that they also included in their paper is that if you cut out the low PT region of the bottom, then it looks like this. Of course, you lower the cross section by a factor of 10, but then it behaves a little bit better. So that tells you that the problematic region is really this low PT of the bottom. Done. Oh, no, not quite. This compares numbers, but okay, maybe we should not go into this. They just compared the numbers of integrating over all phase space, our next to leading order result to their next to leading order result here. And what you see for the LHC, that the numbers agree really well, I mean, unexpectedly well, but they have much larger errors because this integration takes a lot of time and they have numerical uncertainties, blah, blah, blah. And our...
Sorry?
They also have scale uncertainties.
Excuse me?
You say the errors come from numerically integrating over the hyperbolic cross section.
Good question. Maybe not.
I don't buy.
No. That's true. You're right.
Is this with the PT cut or not?
This is no PT cut. No PT cut.
Don't they come from the scale uncertainty? Because they have.
I guess so.
30%. That's plus minus 30%.
I guess so.
Why the agreement for the teletrubles? Where is that for the
I don't know. It's not really worse. I mean, let's say, why is it worse? I mean, yes, but why is it worse? So look at the errors. But look at the errors. Come on, look at the errors. I mean, you're not supposed to look at the central value, no? I mean, they have an uncertainty of like more than 50% here.
Is it just glue going to be the value?
No. All this is just everything. Okay. Everything, of course, of course.
Well, the Q bar is more important.
Of course. No.
You have less splittering.
Everything is included, right. Of course.
So the last one says it works. Either way, it works equally. The answers are the same.
The answers are basically the same. Yes. Now.
In contrast to the earlier graphs.
In contrast to the earlier, that is because yeah. No, because before you had the leading order here only. You had the leading order result, which has a strong scale dependence. Now, you choose the wrong scale, you're off.
That's next one.
That's next to leading order.
So which scale is this?
This is, at next to leading order, it doesn't really matter, okay? because it's basically flat here.
For this one,
I guess it's MB plus mx over 2 or so. So, conclusions for the...
For the LHC, I mean, you need to find these numbers back on the curves on the previous slide. And for the LHC, for the glue-glue fusion curves, you have to choose a pretty low scale to get 7.3 as central values.
For this one?
For this one. You have to choose a fairly low scale. I mean, we sort of estimated that at M Higgs half, you're at scales of... you come out with...
450 femtobarts. Basically, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what it tells you is this total rate, okay, what we have seen, this curve, the mu f dependence of this BB bar h at next to next leading order is basically flat. So the total rate is under control. I think it tells you that the bottom cork densities are a very useful tool, which is not which has not been clear for a long time. Apparently, or it has been under discussion for a long time, and these discussions on the factorization scale that I'm not going to go into, and I hope we're not going to go into here, are settling. Done. Let's go to Higgs-Strahlung, quickly. That is my last subject here. Higgs-Strahlung, we all know that it's very important at the Tevatron. It's not so important at the LHC. If the LHC has lots of luminosity, it can be very important also, for example, for measurement of Higgs properties and stuff. So now we want to have the best theoretical prediction for this process, of course. So what we do is we do QCD corrections, and it turns out that they are just Relian. This has been done in 1990. You get a 30% increase of the cross-section as in Relian also. Now, the thing is that you even have next-to-next-to leading order for the Relian. So you do this. And you almost have the next-to-next-to leading order for Higgs-Strahlung. And the only thing is that if you have a, if you produce a Z boson, you also have other channels like this one, where you couple the gluons to Z boson and the Higgs through a top loop. But this has also been calculated by, for example, Bernd Kniel more than 10 years ago, almost 15 now. Now, we took all these things. This one was recomputed using modern tools, fine arts, these programs. They can basically do this on pressing a button. And we have the next-to-next-to leading order QCD corrections for this Higgs-Strahlung process. Then, recently, there has also been a calculation of the order alpha electroweak corrections by this group. And we put all these things together. This is the leading order prediction with some scale, where you vary the scale within a factor of 3 around M Higgs plus MZ or MW. Leading order K factor for W production. And this is the next to leading order. Again, you observe something similar as in gluon fusion. These bands don't overlap. And then you go to next to leading order, and you see an amazing accuracy here. No. The next to next to leading order QCD corrections that come from pure Trelian have never been implemented in this Higgs-Strahlung process.
But did you check that? I mean, you vary mu f and mu r equal.
That's right.
And did you check that it's not this fantastic?
No. We check. Absolutely.
So if you vary.
If we vary in the opposite directions, same thing. Order. Same thing.
Yeah. So from a point of view, QCD is the same thing like the grad.
That's right. This is really the maximum. This is
W, which happens to be chaos.
That's right. So this is the QCD correction. You see this fantastic accuracy here, and then you add the electroweak corrections, which are sort of significant here. Also another 5% effect or so.
Don't I just?
Well, like for Drelian, they will be the same. that's it. I think, as a conclusion, I can say that inclusive Higgs cross-sections at the LHC are under very good theoretical control. We have next to leading order results for gluon fusion, which results in uncertainty of like plus minus 15% bottom quark fusion or BB bar annihilation, and Higgs Strahlung with this incredible accuracy here. And then we have next to leading order results for TT bar Higgs production. Okay, just to make certain again, this is not only glu-glu to Higgs, it of course includes all the subprocesses. QQ bar, everything, which results also in 10% accuracy. Glu-glu to BB bar Higgs, we found that the accuracy is okay. You can discuss about what is the accuracy here. And weak boson fusion is also known to next to leading order with resulting uncertainty at the same level of like deep inelastic scattering, because the radiative corrections to weak boson fusion are basically DIS corrections. So what are open questions? Well, how big is the need for distributions at higher orders? Or how much can these inclusive cross sections, these inclusive K factors tell us already? Then what is the need for backgrounds? Which backgrounds are needed at higher orders still? Then how does the background prediction from theory compare to the background extraction from the data? What will be more important? And do we really need next to leading order Monte Carlo for Higgs production, for example? Okay, I think I'm a little bit over time, but it's not only my fault.